We only have a couple more lessons out of the book of Judges. So this morning we're going to be in Judges chapter 20. Judges chapter 20. As Lan and I were talking this morning, you know, we get in a whole lot of trouble when we trust our own judgment, don't we? Last night Hunter texted me and said he was cleaning out his freezer in the garage because it had quit working. And the interesting fact about that is that Lana has been telling her son for 2 years his freezer was not working right. And so instead of heeding the counsel of one who knows, they just left it in there, and now everything that's in there is ruined. And so we kind of do that, don't we, at times? We kind of trust our own judgment. We push things off in life. We don't act accordingly. And man, how many times can you think of in life that you've just gotten in trouble because you've trusted your own judgment? You know, through my boys' life, I've always counseled them. I've always given them instruction. I've always tried to encourage them. And I'm giving them instruction. I'm giving them counsel from a place that they've not been, from a place that they're not at. From a place of more knowledge of life, more experience, and I can't tell you how rewarding it is as a father, as they mature and grow, that every year that goes by, I get smarter and smarter. Because they finally are coming into some of those places, they're finally coming into a little bit more knowledge, a little bit more understanding, and they're finally realizing and reflecting back on the words that their dad used to speak to them. And now it's like, I get it. But isn't it fascinating to us that we kind of do that in our own life, in our own, especially in our Christian walk, is we have a tendency a lot of times to trust our own judgment instead of seeking the counsel and guidance from God. And we're doing the very same thing in our spiritual walk that my two boys used to do with Lana and I. They would hear us, but they would discount it because they trusted their own judgment, even though their judgment was imperfect. And we do the same thing in our spiritual walk with God. Our judgment is imperfect, yet we don't go to what is perfect to have a better understanding of how we should walk in this life and how we should move forward in this life. And you're going to kind of see this through Judges chapter 20. It's an intriguing chapter. It's a little bit confusing to me. It's a little bit complex. But you're going to see kind of that happen through Judges chapter 20. And we're gonna discuss some of that this morning. But this is what happens in life when we think we know better than God does. And so you've heard me say, as we've studied the book of Judges, you've heard me say that the two things that were kind of, that keep getting mentioned and keep being spoken through the book of Judges, matter of fact, it's going to be how the book of Judges end, is we have no king, right? And they did what was right in their own eyes. You see those two phrases mentioned multiple times throughout the book of Judges. We have no king, and they did what was right in their own eyes. Let's translate that out into a more modern ideology so that we can relate to it. Because, I mean, we have a president, but we don't have a king. But that we need to kind of understand what's being said there. When we lean on our own understanding and our own judgment and don't defer to God, what we are saying is, I have no king. And I'm going to do what is right in my own eyes. It's the very same statement that is made throughout the entire book of Judges that maybe we have not made the connection to yet. But when we lean on our own understanding and don't lean on God, what we are saying is, I have no king. Therefore, I will do what is right in my own eyes. Have we fallen victim to that in our lives? Have we fallen victim that our actions are very much communicating the same thing that is being communicated through the book of Judges? Are we saying, I don't have a king? I don't have a moral guide. I don't have somebody that's going to show me, teach me, and guide me through this life. I don't have that. So I'm going to trust my own judgment. I don't know about you, Aaron, but that's not worked so well for me in my life. Every now and then I get it right. But how many times do we get it wrong? And sometimes we can get it right and still be wrong. Don't you hate that? So let's look at Judges chapter 20 this morning. If you remember last week, we discussed Judges chapter 19, and what a morbid chapter. You have this Levite and his concubine, they're headed back home after he goes and gets her back, and they stop in Gibeah, and a group of men from that town come, and they want to take him, and instead they offer up the concubine, right? She is raped and tortured, left for dead. He takes her back home dead, cuts her up in pieces, and delivers her to all of Israel. Don't imagine you'd want to be on the receiving end of that UPS package. But in chapter 20 and verse 1, it says, "Then all the people of Israel came out from Dan to Beersheba, including the land of Gilead, and the congregation assembled as one man to the Lord at Mizpah." Something's finally gotten their attention. Something has finally happened that has united them, that has brought them in. They've come to a face-to-face with an awareness of just how bad things are. And sometimes in our own Christian walk, that's what it takes, doesn't it? Sometimes it takes for us to come face-to-face with what we have become without God. Sometimes it requires us to stare ourselves in the mirror and realize just how poor a decisions we've made in life. And that just jerks a knot in us because we come face-to-face with the realization of our imperfection and our inability to make the proper judgment and do the right things. But this has brought the people of Israel together. This one act of an awareness of just how morbid things have become. And notice at the end, very end of chapter 19 is a story of the concubine and the Levite come to a close, and these packages are sent out. In verse 30 it said, all who said it says, "Such a thing has never happened or been seen from the day that the people of Israel came up out of the land of Egypt until this day. Consider it, take counsel, and speak." Nothing like this has happened since they've come up out of Egypt. And so for the first time, they stop for just a second and come to an awareness of just how bad things have gotten. Just how bad things have gotten when they have lived by the code that we have no king and we'll just do what's right in our own eyes. You know, we live in a society, we live in a world today that has so many different factors by which morality is gauged. This is something that happened. You know, years start running together the older I get. But it was over 20 years ago. How about if I just do that? I was listening. Anybody heard, and I think I've even mentioned this before, has anybody ever heard or listened to, I don't even know if she's on the radio anymore, Dr. Laura Schlesinger. People would call in to her seeking counsel. She was a Jew. And I used to listen to her on KOB out of the Albuquerque station. And people will call in every day wanting counsel, wanting guidance. They've got this bad circumstance going on in their life, and they need somebody to put some direction behind it. And over a million people a day used to try to get a hold of her. That's how many people are searching for what is right. That is how many people are searching because what is right in their eyes has landed them in a mess. And they're searching. And she's talking to this lady, and this lady is saying, "Well, she's doing this, and I'm doing this." And the first question Dr. Laura asked was, "Well, are either of you religious?" "Well, no. I don't know how to help you." Because her moral compass says this is okay. Your moral compass says this is okay. How many moral compasses do we have in today's society? A bunch. The conflict that we so often end up in is because everybody is chasing a different morality. The saddest thing to me is if a million people a day were trying to get a hold of someone because their way didn't work, are we reaching out to people because people are searching? Are we pointing people to a Messiah that's going to give them the true and only compass? Because our excuse has always been, they don't want him. The reality is they need something. The reality is they're searching for something. They're looking for something. They've come face to face with themselves and realized my way doesn't work. I need help. Are we out there giving any? Are we out there showing people what help looks like? Real help. Eternal help. Something that's going to help a person because they have a king now. Starts by us appreciating and understanding that we have a king. And we don't do things by our own judgment. We seek the counsel of God. And so as this next chapter of Judges unfolds, there's finally this unity. But I want you to understand the unity isn't necessarily at this point in time around God. The unity is about this tragic event that's happened. And so as they gather together and as they assemble, verse 3 it says, "Now the people of Benjamin heard that the people of Israel had gone up to Mizpah." Guess what? One of the tribes wasn't invited. One of the tribes weren't invited to this council. So were they all united? Maybe not all united, but most of them were united. And the people of Israel said, "Tell us, how did this evil happen?" And the Levite, the husband of the woman who was murdered, answered and said, "I came to Gibeah that belongs to Benjamin, I and my concubine, to spend the night." He retells the story, but he leaves a few things out. "They meant to kill me, and they violated my concubine, and she is dead." Fascinating to me that he leaves out the part that he went back in the house, finished dinner, and had a good night's rest. Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 7. This one tickles me. "The one who states his case first seems right, until the other comes and examines him." See, the Levite gave his version of the story, right? But there was no one there to offer the other end of the story. Doesn't make it right. But was he right? Was he right in how he handled that situation? I say he wasn't. So he goes through the story, relives it. Verse 8, and said, "And all," I'm going to have to bounce a little bit. One thing I have learned since I'm recovering from COVID, I'm not contagious, don't worry, is that because it affected my lungs, I run out of air faster. So I used to have an unlimited word allocation per day, as some of you all know, but I don't right now. So I'm going to bounce a little bit more than I normally do because at some point in time, y'all may not be able to hear me. I'm just going to be breathing out. So verse 8 said, "And all the people rose as one man, saying, none of us will go to his tent, none of us will return to his house, but now this is what we will do at Gibeah. We will go up against it by lot, and we will take 10 men of 100 throughout all the tribes of Israel." Goes through these numbers of what they're planning on doing. In verse 11 it says, "So all the men of Israel gathered against the city, united as one man, and the tribes of Israel sent men through all the tribes of Benjamin, saying, what evil is this that has taken place among you?" What I find fascinating is that there's been evil going on through Israel through this whole period of time. Hadn't there? There's been bad things happening. Through the whole story, through the whole book of Judges, evil has been happening. But this one event, because it just got so bad, this one event unites most of Israel. As I was thinking about that this week and kind of mulling that over in my head, the one thing that just kept popping up in my head is 9/11. A lot of y'all remember that day, don't you? Because it was this event that happened that said, oh man, it's gotten that bad. Doesn't mean it wasn't bad before. It's just gotten that bad. Doesn't mean we haven't done what's right. It's just gotten that bad. But it was this one event that for, and I think y'all remember that the months following 9/11, just this unity that the United States had that I in my life, I can assure you, have never felt before. Because this one, it just had gotten so bad that it united us. But boy, was it momentary, wasn't it? Boy, was it momentary. Nothing lasts that's from man. Unity doesn't work if it's from man. Y'all have heard me say this before. Fellowship is an intriguing word to me because I think it's used a lot in churches. I think we aspire to have fellowship, to be in fellowship. I think it's a word it's one of those words that just gets stuck in my head a little bit. And the more I've thought about it, the more I've thought, you know what? We try to recreate what's already been created. We're trying to recreate something that God's already perfected. We're trying to all get along. We're trying to be united. We're trying to have fellowship. We're trying to have this moment. When the reality is, the perfect picture of fellowship is God, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and He's inviting us into that fellowship. He's saying, don't recreate it, be a part of who I am. And the more people that are a part of who He is, the more people that are going to be joined down here. Because we're joined up there first. And so you kind of see this picture of what has united Israel, but it's not God that's united them, it's an event that's united them, and as a result of it being an event, as soon as this event's over, guess what's going to happen? We'll go back our separate ways. We're going to do our own thing. They gave Benjamin a chance. Now therefore, verse 13, give up the men, the worthless fellows in Gibeah, that we may put them to death and purge evil from Israel. Yeah. They're going to purge evil from Israel by getting rid of these guys. That's like the pot calling the kettle black. They don't recognize their own evil because they found evil that was worse. They found evil that was uglier. They found evil that stood out. They found evil that they could all unite against. And in the process, they're not even looking at themselves. And at first, I was struck that the Benjamites would not listen to the voices of their brothers. This is all of Israel. These are fellow brothers. These are the chosen people of God. And they're not listening to Israel that want just these men. And at first, I read that, and I was like, why wouldn't they do that? Why would they jeopardize their existence for these guys that did this immoral act? Well, maybe they should have been invited to Mizpah so they could hear what happened, so that they could make a determination for themselves, but they weren't invited. And so they have to trust the word of the Israelites who predetermined when they come that an evil thing has happened and we're going to make amends for that. And so they reject this. So they decide to go against him in battle. Let's go to verse 18. The people of Israel rose and went up to Bethel and inquired of God, who shall go up first to us, for us to fight against the people of Benjamin? And the Lord said, Judah shall go up first. This is one of the few times you're going to see an inquiry of God followed up by a decimation. Verse 19, then the people of Israel rose in the morning and camped against Gibeah, and the men of Israel went out to fight against Benjamin. And the men of Israel drew up the battle line against them at Gibeah, and the people of Benjamin came out of Gibeah and destroyed on that day 22,000 men from Israel. Say, what? The wrong team won. That's interesting. Verse 23, and the people of Israel went up and wept before the Lord until that evening. And they inquired of the Lord, shall we again draw near to fight against our brothers, the people of Benjamin? And the Lord said, go up against them. Verse 24, so the people of Israel came near against the people of Benjamin the second day. And Benjamin went against them out of Gibeah in the second day and destroyed 18,000 men of the people of Israel. All these were men who drew the sword. Come again? The good guys lost again? I mean, that's a little backwards, isn't it? I mean, they're asking God, right? Well, what'd they ask God the first time? Who should go first? Hey, God, I'm letting you know, we've already predetermined what's going to happen here. All we need is for you to rubber stamp it. You know, one of my salesmen called me yesterday. He didn't call, he texted. And he said, hey, is it better to ask for permission or forgiveness? I said, well, it depends on who you're asking. Well, he had already sold the car, but he was looking for the boss to rubber stamp it. So he felt better about it. They're not asking God if this is what they should do or how they should do it. They're saying, God, this is what we're doing. Who's first? Oh, okay. If that's all you're asking, how about Judah? Okay. Send him out. Second time, whoa, that didn't work so well, God. Let's weep a little bit now. Let's inquire again. Should we go out against him? Sure, go ahead. Neither time did God say you're going to be victorious. Again, evil is present in all of Israel. How many times do you inquire of God looking for the rubber stamp? How many times do you inquire of God saying, hey, God, I've already got it figured out, but you good? You good with this? Hey, show me that I'm right. How many times do we look for proof that we were right? Rubber stamp this for me, God. I've already determined where I'm going, what I'm going to do, the direction I'm going to take in my life. Would you say that's okay for me? Look and see what happens different the third time. Then all the people of Israel, the whole army, went up. How many? Not just a few of them, all of them. All of them went up. And came to Bethel and wept. They sat there before the Lord and fasted that day until evening, and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. And the people of Israel inquired of the Lord, for the Ark of the Covenant of God was there in those days, and Phinehas the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, ministered before it in those days, saying, shall we go once more to battle against our brothers, to the people of Benjamin, or shall we cease? And the Lord said, go up, for tomorrow I will give them into your hands. The people of Benjamin fell that day. But it begs the question, is your evil worse than mine? Was Benjamin's evil worse than Israel's evil? We have a tendency in life to gauge things, to weigh them. Speeding tickets, not quite as bad as I hate saying murder, but because that seems so extreme. But we kind of condition things. We gauge things. And as a result, a lot of times it's obvious and apparent when somebody is just totally out of line. Because we're almost in line. Because we almost have it right. Because our evil isn't as bad as your evil. My evil doesn't look quite like yours. Yours is uglier than mine. God, what should I do about this guy that has so violated who you are? And God's saying, why don't we start with you, Kevin? Why don't we start with you? Because are you being a reflection of who I am? Are you being who I need you to be? During this period of time in history, Israel was not near God. Oh, sure, they throw an inquiry here and there, but God wasn't part of their plans. God wasn't invited to mitzvah when they all united. See, they didn't unite with God. They united with a tragic event. What are you going to unite to? What are you going to draw near to? You going to get up in arms because politics are out crazy right now? What's going to unite you? If it's anything but Christ and Him crucified, it will not last. It will be temporary, and it will let you down. I'm here to tell you this morning, we have a King, and we need to do what is right in His eyes. Don't be Israel during this period of time in history. We have been redeemed by the blood of Jesus Christ. Let's start acting like we're redeemed. This morning, if there's anything that we can do for you, if you're in this place where you have learned that you're just better than the next guy, so you're good. If you function and operate your life that way, understand what you're telling God. You have no king. And you're just going to do what's right in your eyes. And that may be a lot of rights. I want to make sure you understand that. That may be a lot of rights. You might get things right 92% of the time. I doubt it, but you might. But it's not enough. We have a king who has redeemed us. Let's start living like redeemed people. If there's anything that we can do for you this morning, I ask that you come as Monty leads us in an invitation song.